You know you've got a comeback in you. When you take the next step, you're going to make it count. For your career, for your family, for your life. You can earn a degree you're proud of with Purdue Global. Purdue Global is backed by Purdue University, one of the nation's most respected and innovative public universities. This is your chance. This is your opportunity. This is your comeback. Purdue Global, Purdue's online university for working adults. Start your comeback today at purdueglobal.edu.
When you buy Kroger brand products, you feel like you're winning. That's because they offer proven quality at lower than low prices. In fact, we guarantee that you and your family will love how Kroger brand products taste, or you get your money back. So next time you're shopping for the family, look for delicious Kroger brand products, because they'll make you all feel like you're winning. Shop now, in-store, or online. Kroger, fresh for everyone.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at cheapcaribbean.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you, from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring, and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
King Slime is a production of iHeart Podcasts and Heirloom Media.
I hear a gunshot go off. And then I tell Dirt, I say, run. Run. And he looked. And he couldn't get away from the dude. And he just took off running. And shots was going off.
He hit them and I fired another shot after that. Now, at this time, he's being reckless. The whole incident, they was being reckless. My life was in jeopardy. My partner's lives was in jeopardy. And so was everybody else's lives around us.
Have you ever seen a car fly over your patrol car?
My patrol car? No.
My eyes blinked and I thought that we were extras in the movie Fast and the Furious.
Sounds like you were in a bad place back then.
Yes, sir.
Things better?
A lot, sir, thankfully, until this came up again.
I'm Christina Lee.
And I'm George Cheedy.
And this is King Slime. So this week, we're recapping some pretty eventful days of the YSL trial, day 30-something. Joining us, of course, is executive producer Tommy Andres. Hey, Tommy.
Hey, thanks for having me, guys.
And so just so we're clear, George has COVID, and that's why he is joining us virtually for this week's episode.
Which is why I am not in the studio, and I suck.
And we have a special guest, award-winning entertainment and culture reporter, making good use of her role 22, being one of the few Atlanta-based reporters covering this YSL trial. It is my friend, Jewel Wicker. Hey, Jewel.
Hey. Thank you for having me.
Of course. I mean, we had to. You've been covering this trial pretty extensively. You've done so for Billboard and for your newsletter, right? What do you think of this trial?
I'm tired. In conclusion, it's just very long and arduous and It's just a lot is the synopsis that I have of this trial. I've been covering it since the indictment, which was 2 years ago.
Has Atlanta seen anything like this before?
This is the longest trial in Georgia history, so no. But obviously, right, there have been high-profile RICO cases before, like the teachers, the ABS cheating scandal trial and things like that. But I definitely think this is in a league of its own at this point.
Well, we're definitely here to talk more about how this is a league of its own, starting with a pretty interesting incident that happened on September 11th, 2013. Tommy, do you want to walk us through what the hell happened?
Yes. So this incident I refer to as the Red Nissan incident. So in 2013, September 11, 2013, like you said, police were called to the Summerdale Apartments, which is right off of Cleveland Avenue and Old Hateville Road. They arrive, but they're in an unmarked car. It's a Ford Taurus. There's two female detectives in the front seat, and then they're training sort of a young up-and-coming officer who's wearing a full uniform. He's in the back seat. And when they arrive, they see this man running through the parking lot in a red shirt, shooting a gun. So this officer who's in the back, the only one wearing a uniform, gets out of the car. His name is Officer El Malik Robeson L.
I had my weapon on him, and I'm telling him to, like, drop the weapon. I'm telling him to drop the weapon, but he didn't comply. And he just started running towards me. I was standing right next to the car. I didn't know that he was running towards this car. So he got into a maroon car, and as he pulled off, I jumped out the way and I shot a shot.
This guy jumps into this red Nissan with other individuals. They drive this car away very quickly. They end up losing. They hit the police car on their way out, then hit the gate of the apartment complex at a speed that is high enough to send them careening over a hill, which they then leap over. This sounds like a buddy cop movie. They end up leaping over this embankment and crashing into a laundromat. There happens to be another police car actually already there, which has leapt over. If you want to make the reference, I'm going to let you make the reference.
Oh, I'm sorry. I called it a Free Willy.
It's pretty great. Free Willy, yep. So they Free Willy over this police car and crash into the laundromat and then are subsequently arrested. We'll sort of unwrap this a little bit more as we go, but those are the basic details. So let's just start there with those basic details, and let's talk about what this incident is and why it's being brought up in the trial, just the real basic, A to Z here. So, Christina, why don't you start us off?
Yeah, absolutely. So the whole reason we're hearing about this Free Willy incident is because it concerns overt acts 5, 6, and 7 on the indictment. So if you're following along as you are in church with your Bible and stuff like that, you're going to see Walter Murphy cited in each of these acts. So that is the reason why we are talking through and trying to piece together what the hell happened. Walter Murphy is charged with the following: attempted armed robbery, aggravated assault with a deadly weapon, and possession of a firearm by a first offender probationer. And so we do end up hearing testimony from somebody who was related to the target of this attempted armed robbery, right?
Exactly. So the person who is mentioned in the indictment, Derek Dotson, he is no longer with us. He's passed away. So he does not testify. But Leonard Pass, who was in the car with Derek at that time, testifies and kind of gives this story that they are at the Summerdale apartment getting out of the car, and he hears somebody call Derek Dotson by his nickname and say, you know what time it is, right? As in they're about to be robbed.
What did this guy say when he approached you, you all?
He said, do you know what time it is?
Now, what do you know, or what do you take, you know what time it is to me?
It mean, really, everything you got on you, you got to get up.
So is it fair to say that's like a robbery?
Basically, that's what it is.
Now, did this suspect have anything in his hands?
Yes.
What did he have?
It looked like a handgun.
And they both kind of run away in opposite directions. We also hear from some of the officers. We also hear from the people related to the actual red Nissan that comes into play. So we hear from a lot of people, but I think the question is, do we need to?
Like, right.
Are some of these testimonies, like, what are we showing here, right? Other than the car was stolen, or other than that, you know, how this red Nissan got here, or you know, that Derek Dotson was indeed kind of robbed. But what does this play into the larger kind of gang conspiracy, I think, is the bigger question that I've had this whole time.
Yeah.
George, you want to speak to that? What do you think about how the prosecution is trying to tie this to YSL?
So I think there's a lot going on here. First, there's a lot of guilt by association that happens in this trial because it's a RICO case. The RICO rules allow for the kind of evidence to be introduced that you would not normally see in a prosecution like this. Some of this, I think, is because they want to introduce the summer, like this apartment complex. The Summergale apartments are notorious in that area of Cleveland Avenue and in the community as sort of a YSL stronghold. Oddly enough, the first time I met Young Thug's dad was by accident, as I was looking at there was a shooting and an arrest over at the Summerdale apartments, and he happened to be in the parking lot, and we struck up a conversation. I had no idea who he was at the time.
Okay.
There's an element of fear within that apartment complex, and I strongly suspect that they're going to revisit the apartments over and over and over again, and they're trying to establish a timeline here. The problem is, Young Thug is just barely mentioned. Like, he's just sort of at the edge of what's going on here, in the sense that, like, he's in the police reports because somebody said his name, but not in a way that ultimately ended up in an arrest.
Right. Right.
Well, yeah, because he's not attached. When you look at Overt Acts 5, 6, and 7 in the indictment, Young Thug doesn't come up. Like, he's not attached to those overt acts. But a lot of this is, like, prosecutors are really trying to get his name into testimony here and really kind of show that he was involved in this in some way. And I think that's the more interesting part of the past few days.
Yeah, let's take a step back and just tell a little bit more about what happens. So once the police get these guys, they piece together that what had happened is that Dotson was robbed, right, by Walter Murphy, who went to prison for this crime. This is what he just got out for in 2022. So he was in prison until 2022 because of this. We talked about Murphy before because he's the one who was released and then brought back, like served his entire sentence, was brought back into the RICO trial, and they used this same incident to charge him with again, which is, we talked about how the double jeopardy implications of that in the show already. So, and then you have two other men who are arrested with him as well, Frederick Prothrow, who is still in prison for this incident, and then Adrian Bean, who is another person that was involved here. So we have these three people, and then the police start taking the stand, and we hear sort of wildly different accounts of what happened that day, which I think is an interesting sort of lens into memory from 10 years ago and what police can recall. They have the reports, and that's all they really have to go on. So let's talk a little bit about that. Jewel, I'm going to throw it to you first. Yeah, what did you learn from the police?
Kind of this idea of some people say there were three people in the car, some people say there were four people in the car.
Do you remember how many people got out of the car as you sit here today?
Yes. It was about four males.
You said about four males?
Yes.
Do you remember... Exactly.
Yes, it was four.
When you looked at the driver, was it a male or a female?
It was a male.
Did that male have a wig on?
No.
Did the male have any blonde hair?
No.
It was a man?
Yes.
Clear, you know it was a man?
Yes.
No ifs, ands, or buts, it was a man?
It was a man.
All right.
I thought the driver was a female.
Why did you think that the driver of the vehicle was female?
Because that individual had shoulder length hair, and it was bouncing and waving like most women here.
This really, I feel like this is indicative of so many of the incidents in this trial where sometimes I leave with more questions than I have answers, right? Like there's a lot more pieces that feel like they need to be filled in than there are from the testimony. I think that was the biggest takeaway that I had from those cop testimonies was as much as we agree on the kind of general outline of this incident, this thing happened, car free wheelies into the laundromat. Like we agree with the outline, but it's some of those like finer lines about how many people were in the car and kind of those details that seem a little more wobbly.
Okay. So it's interesting that you bring up that there's more questions than answers because I pretty much came away from the same sort of takeaway, right? So given everything you said, George, about the reputation of the apartment complex, it makes sense to me now why there would be cops sort of patrolling the area, just so happen to bear witness and then be part of the shit show. What isn't answered is basically comes down to the fact that the lead detective in all of this, Detective David Quinn, has yet to take the stand. And so what ends up being really frustrating is that we're hearing from detectives who are surveying the scene, who are in charge of like taking in the evidence and the firearms. I'm talking about you, Summer Benton, who like gets grilled with all these questions about like, okay, well, can you test this Wendy's styrofoam cup for DNA? What is this in the car? And what is this in the car? Is that a toolbox I see? And she is just like, that was not my job. That was not what I was instructed that was supposed to be my job.
You said that you collect any evidence that may be important. Did you say something like that?
That's not what I said. I said my job on scene was to photograph the scene, preserve what was inside, except for the firearms and the cell phones. I took those out. And that's because I was advised to rendered the firearms safe, handed the cell phones, I believe, over to Detective Quinn. And then anything else that was involving that car was to be processed at a later date.
There's a whole lot of questions about surveillance footage that gets mentioned in the police radio, talking about how they need to get access to a surveillance tape, I guess, like, that was being recorded in a camera that was affixed to the coin laundromat that the car ultimately free willies into. Detective David Quinn would have been in charge of getting all that, but basically everybody's kind of throwing up their hands and being like, well, that wasn't my job. I was just here. I was here training. I was here patrolling. This was not my business originally. I just happened to be here.
They've also been debating what is appropriate for evidence, for handling,
oh my God.
For the handling of evidence, which I found to be really interesting, because there was an incident where I think it was a statement was taken and the detective felt like maybe it wasn't quite accurate, so he deleted it, which he said was totally fine.
Is it police policy to record a statement from a witness and then erase the statement?
There is no policy that exists that specifically addresses that.
Okay. Is that proper protocol?
It could be. Okay. And I think in context, typically interviewing witnesses and sometimes even suspects, more often than not, they lie.
But the defense seems really adamant to point out that that's not proper protocol. So
right. They
keep asking every subsequent detective that comes on the stand, would you delete testimony even if you thought it was a lie?
It is improper as a detective to delete evidence, correct?
That would be improper.
That would be wrong?
Yes.
Tell the jurors why that would be wrong.
Because that's evidence.
And some of them are like, absolutely not. That is obstruction of justice, extremely inappropriate. And some of them are like, I guess, why are you asking me? What does this have to do? They're like, why am I being asked this? So I think even this like kind of sidebar about what's appropriate for taking kind of witness statements and taking down evidence on the scene has become an mm-hmm. interesting kind of sidebar.
I know.
In this.
Poor Sharon Lattner's. She's the 911 custodian who absolutely doesn't want to be here. Every time she gets welcomed back, she's like, whatever, leave me out of this. What am I doing here?
Welcome back, Ms. Lattner.
Okay.
I hope you're doing all right.
I am. Thank you.
But then also, just to backtrack, so the car that was ultimately part of all this was borrowed, right, from a Kennesaw State University student. Her boyfriend decides to borrow it, goes on this ride to try to find weed. He's high the entire time. And so the whole reason why there's this debate over whether to delete statements or not was because dude was like, listen, I was high. I realized that the car was taken and I was doing everything I can to just extricate myself from the situation. I was willing to say absolutely whatever.
Did anything happen with the car while you were at his house?
Yes, it was apparently borrowed.
How did it get, as you say, borrowed? What do you mean by that?
I don't exactly know how this happened. I do remember being really faded, kind of in and out of what I would say consciousness. I was pretty messed up trying to look for the next high.
And I guess like it was acknowledged by the detectives, like when you recognize that a statement is bullshit, I'm just going to go ahead and scratch that and we're going to move on and you're going to give me the truth. So that ends up, like you said, Jewel, being this whole entire sidebar based on the testimony from this poor guy who was just like, I was high. I do not understand the passage of time when I'm high. I didn't know where I was. Sometimes when you get a weed connect, you up in a place when you don't know anybody. And you just sit there and you think to yourself, and I just felt so bad for him.
Yeah, because then the defense brings it up where they're kind of saying, like, well, if you're deleting things because you perceive them to be untrue, is there evidence in that that we could use to defend our client? Right. Or is there, like, pertinent information that is also being deleted? Like, what's the protocol for that? Is that proper conduct? It was really interesting.
Yeah, I loved that they brought in all these people. So you have this, the woman who lent her car to her boyfriend.
Do you recognize that vehicle in State's Exhibit 36, Charlie?
Yes, sir. That's a vehicle that I owned.
Right. The boyfriend who went to smoke weed at this house, and then the car was basically stolen while he was at this house.
He heard somebody say offhand, I need to borrow a car, and next thing you know, it was gone.
His car is gone, yeah. So, and then this car is, of course, used in this incident, but you have these people brought on the stand, so you've got the poor woman whose car was stolen who has absolutely nothing to do
with
this.
She was in class!
Well, she reminds me of the first woman, the stage mom. Do you remember who I'm talking about, whose car gets stolen? Mm-hmm. And she's like, my car got stolen. But she has no other, she's like, I don't know who stole it. Right. I can't tell you anything else. I just know I'm missing a car and the car shows up somewhere else, right? Like, she's brought in, and I get she's brought in to tie into the fact that the car was stolen, which is later found. But I just, it feels like sometimes we get all these extra testimonies that just kind of like drag on, and they're not, they don't know anything about the actual, like, crime, you know, right. I don't know. It's interesting.
We spent like over an hour, maybe even 2 hours with that woman, and then several hours with the boyfriend, who also doesn't really fit into the bigger narrative in a way that is meaningful.
Yeah.
So, George, I'm actually curious to hear from you. Like, there's also the DNA expert who tells us all about how DNA works and then reveals that his findings were inconclusive. So it's like we get this.
He was flown in from Maryland to tell everybody shit was inconclusive.
He wasn't able to testify the day he was supposed to, so they had to keep him a whole extra day, probably change his flight. And then he goes, you know, and then he gets up on the stand and he says basically nothing. I mean, I've learned a lot about DNA and how it's analyzed, which was cool.
Bill Nye the Science Guy.
Yeah, but then they analyze these three guns and it's like, we couldn't really figure out whose DNA was on this. Maybe Walter Murphy was on one of them, which, Walter Murphy's DNA is most certainly on it. He was caught shooting a gun. Like, this is not the question that we need to answer. But anyway, George, I'm curious, is there a strategy behind all of these like minutia details being brought out in court one after another?
So I think part of this is like a legal requirement to establish the basis for evidence. Like, where you have to say, all right, we have this piece of evidence. This is how we know it's evidence. So here is our presentation. And in a trial that wasn't looking at 7 years of data, this probably wouldn't, you know, be this kind of thing. Yeah. But we're going to be going through this over and over and over again. But some of this is extraneous, and it's obviously so. No, I think the prosecution is dragging some of this out because they want to land the most important pieces at the end, and they know that they've got to do some of this stuff. So they're getting the boring, ridiculous stuff out of the way early. On the other hand, I think they are burning goodwill in the process.
That's the question.
And that I don't understand. You know, assuming they've got the evidence that we have heard that they have, phone calls, wiretaps, insider testimony, never mind things like the body camera of the police officer who was shot at that apartment complex, I might add, by Christian Eppinger. I see that they're trying to lay up the blocks so that they can say, once they introduce the Eppinger, you know, evidence, that, hey, do you remember this apartment complex where these guys were in this car chase that was like out of, you know, Dukes of Hazzard thing? And now you've got some guy shooting a cop 6 times, once in the back of the head. You know, these things are connected. But it's a long slog from here to there. I have no idea what the jury is actually going to remember. I think that they're looking for impressions.
To your point, too, George, I think you know, they do have this responsibility to lay this foundation. So they do have to bring certain people in. But we also have to keep in mind that these things happened 10 years ago. So you have somebody like a Leonard Paz who you have to bring in. Derek Dotson is dead. You want to establish that this crime occurred, that they were robbed. You have to bring him in.
Now, Ms. Paz, how is your memory?
I guess I can say it's not that good.
Why is it not that good?
I mean, I had like a concussion when I played football once.
But then you also got to contend with the fact that he's like, I got a concussion. And maybe I said he was 6'3", but maybe he was, you know what I mean? Like you're right. Trying to discuss like the height of somebody, or you're trying to discuss, you know, what the person who did the robbery looked like and all of those things. And those things become fuzzy because even for somebody who doesn't have a concussion, it was 10 years ago.
Exactly.
And so it's, you know, there's no perfect witness kind of thing.
Not to mention when you're dealing with a traumatic incident like that with getting robbed, you don't know anything. You don't have a height chart next to you. Everything is happening so fast. And it was Leonard who was like, we need to run.
Yeah.
So if you were bolting that fast from somebody who has a gun, nobody has time to gauge somebody's weight. Are you serious?
I cannot tell you what that man's nostrils look like. You know what I mean? Like I was in fight or flight mode. I don't know what his eye shape was. You know, right. I was running. So I think, yeah, I get it.
All right. Well, let's take a break and we'll be right back to talk more about this incident.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Ocean by H10 Hotels and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Good sleep should come naturally, and with the new Natural Hybrid mattress, it can. A collaboration between award-winning mattress brand Leesa and home design favorite West Elm, the Natural Hybrid is the culmination of these two companies' shared values: premium materials, meticulous craftsmanship, and sustainable practices. Made with natural latex, responsibly sourced natural wool, and environmentally safe foams, the Natural Hybrid elevates your sleep sanctuary. Indulges your senses and supports a greener tomorrow. Plus, when you purchase the Natural Hybrid, you're also helping fuel Leesa's work with shelters and those in need. Since 2015, Leesa has donated more than 40,000 mattresses to ensure children and families have a safe place to sleep. Don't put off a good night's sleep any longer. Get a Leesa mattress today for a sound sleep tonight. Visit leesa.com/iHeart. That's leesa.com/iHeart.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at avalonwaterways.com.
All right, welcome back to King Slime. So, all right, we've been talking about all these people coming up and testifying, and we learned these details, and I want to sort of get a gut check from all of you on this, because we have some cops saying there were four people in the car, some cops saying there were three people in the car, that the people scattered when the car hit the laundromat in different directions, and there is this idea that one of the people got away. Now, some of the cops said, the two female cops who were in the unmarked Taurus with the officer, one of them ends up arresting Walter Murphy on the ground. And these folks testified that a woman was driving the car with a blonde wig. And there's this actually really funny moment where they must have at some point described her in the report or something as large-chested. Is there something like that? It's like, we'll play the clip. You'll hear it.
Do you know
what it means when someone, a woman, is described as heavy-chested?
Yes.
Okay. What would you imagine that? To, not imagine. What would that be if you were to describe a woman as heavy-chested? What would your description be?
I guess. No.
I'm going to sustain on what's relevance.
I'll move on.
All right. Thank you.
Which is funny because that goes back and forth. But I'm trying to figure out what's happening when they're talking about this. And it seems like, was there some, they show pictures of Young Thug at the time to like show what he looked like, the defense does, and like they're trying to counter something. Is what's happening here that they're saying Young Thug was the fourth person in this car? And are they saying that Young Thug was potentially confused for this female driver? I'm just going to ask those questions because those are questions I had when I was watching this. So Christina, I want to start.
Yeah. I mean, the week kicked off very confusingly because, yeah, one of the first things that we're seeing is like Young Thug's arrest record and then like a mugshot. And then basically you have an officer confirming, yes, that's a mugshot. Any other questions? No, I guess I'm permanently excused now. But yeah, they were like trying to parse whether Young Thug's hair was blonde or black at the time. So you're being introduced to this and you're like, what the hell is this going on? Like, don't we know this cop shit already? And then turns out, I guess the lead up supposedly is that what we hear over police radio is that they are still in search of somebody who may have escaped, jumped over the fence of the hill from which the car freewheeled and is on the run somewhere. And the entire time that police are trying to track down who this fourth person is, the only bit of information that they've held on to is that this person is a woman. This person is a woman. There's a blonde wig and stuff like that. I guess this is what they're leading up to in attempts to connect Young Thug. But right now it still feels like it's an open-ended question. Whether there was a fourth person or not, we're still not even sure.
Which, to your point, they seem really determined to try to place Young Thug in that car. And I think that speaks to the Adrian Bean of it all, which I'm sure we'll get to. Because he, you know, there's these jail calls where he says that Young Thug was in the car, but they haven't been played to jury yet.
Me and Thug got there. We get out of the car and run. I just went the wrong motherfucking way, man. I should have followed Thug there.
And he's gotten on the stand so far and has said, 2013... I don't know what happened in 2013.
I just suffered from Molly. I don't know if y'all familiar with that.
You said you suffered from Molly?
Yes, ma'am.
I suffered from Molly, which mm-hmm. was his way of saying that he had a substance use issue with Molly and that he was high for most of that time and that he cannot recall or remember anything that happened in 2013. And so the prosecutors kind of drill down where they're like asking line by line kind of some of the things he said on that jail call, one of them being that Young Thug was in the car, right? And he just every time says, I don't recall.
I know Young Thug for his music.
Like the
That's
question
it.
Here is, what will the jury believe?
Right. Will the jury believe
Bean right now saying, I don't remember. I don't know. Or will they believe that he was saying something true when he was speaking at the time in 2013?
Exactly. And to your point, they're setting it up, right? So prosecutors have had this discussion outside of the jury where they say, we have this jail call. Bean says Thug's in the car. He, you know, says that Walter Murphy was shooting at cops, mm-hmm. yada, yada, yada. We have this jail call. If Adrian Bean gets up there and is like, I remember it all, like it was yesterday. Yes, Young Thug was in the car and Walter Murphy shot at the cops and, you know, blah, blah, blah. Then we don't need the jail call because he has corroborated everything that we have said. If he gets up there and he's like, it's all a blur, I can't remember, which is exactly what he does, then we want to bring in the jail call to show that that's not what he said 10 years ago. And so, you know, the judge has kind of agreed, you know, if it plays out how y'all think it might play out, then we can bring the jail call in. If not, then we don't need the jail call. So really what the prosecution is doing when they're asking him line by line, did you refer to Big Jeff? Did you refer to, you know, yada, they're going line by line based on what he said in those jail calls, is because they want him to say, I don't remember, or I didn't say that, mm-hmm. so that they can then go, funny you should say that. Here's the jail call, right? They're setting it up so that they can play that jail call. And to your point, George, say, all right, jurors, who do you believe? Do you believe 2013 Adrian Bean or do you believe 2024 Adrian Bean?
Mm-hmm. And because they were debating about whether this was going to be put in as evidence, we got a chance to hear the jail call. So we, you know, the jurors haven't heard it yet, but we did. And so what he specifically says is this: he's talking to his wife from the jail after he's arrested. He said, "I wish I would have run with Thug because he got away." That's exactly what he says. So it is. So George, you sound like you were about to chime in there. What do you make of all this?
Well, it goes to this question of conspiracy and what the jury is going to be thinking. Because if they're hearing Bean deny knowledge of this call in 2013, then it will feed into this idea that the gang is still trying to protect themselves one way or another, that they're engaging in a no snitching thing where they protect Young Thug and maybe themselves in the process. The irony is, by saying, "No, I don't remember. I don't know anything. I was high." A juror may conclude, "Well, they're all lying. Mm-hmm. There must be a real gang. This is a conspiracy. That's what racketeering is." And boom, conviction. Like, it is really insidious.
Yeah.
Like, I think, because sorry, let's assume he's telling the truth. Like there are no conditions under which he could say anything one way or another, other than, "No, I didn't say that. This is a lie," where a juror who already had skepticism of the people who are testifying would lower their skepticism of what they're saying. Like, in that, I can see why the prosecution would want to keep trying to set up situations like this, to just sort of create this parade of witnesses who are saying, "I don't know, I don't recall, this isn't true," like, in order to make them all look like they're guilty.
And Adrian Bean's thing is like, "I'm not," you know, he explicitly says, "I'm not in YSL. This don't have nothing to do with me. I want to put this time behind me. I've served my time. I don't remember nothing. Stop asking me questions," right? But then there's also these moments where Adrian Love says, "Do you recognize anybody in this courtroom?" And he's like, "No." And then he's like, "Oh, I do know Young Thug, but I know him through his music," right? And so then you have to ask yourself, how is the jury going to perceive that when they hear these jail calls where he's like, "I should have run with Thug"? And it's like, "Well, you said you didn't know Thug. You said you only knew him through his music, or you said you didn't really know, you knew of him from the neighborhood, but that you had never really had any personal dealings with him." That is, I think, what goes to your point, George, of does the "I don't recall" or the "no ma'ams" and kind of the non-responsiveness then kind of play up this idea of look at them continuing to protect kind of the quote unquote gang or themselves, whether or not Adrian Bean says he's an official member of YSL or not.
So that's something for the jury to look forward to. It seems they're going to be able to hear that call. It's most likely. In the meantime, you know, as all this testimony is taking place, we are seeing debate between prosecution and defense over whether to admit yet another call. This was specifically like a 911 call. It also took place September 11th, 2013. Confusingly, it occurs at the next phase of the Summerdale apartment complex that we've been talking about. So it's literally just kind of like around the corner. And in this call, we have a 911 caller reporting a shooting. And she says that there is a shooter hiding in her friend's home. And she says, "They came to my house and told me that the guy who shot somebody's name was Young Thug, whoever that is supposed to be." And she also says, "Please don't tell anybody I made this call.
It's not an emergency. The guy that shot the guy on Cleveland Avenue, he's in my friend's apartment, and she's panicking. She don't know what to do."
We have prosecution saying, like, of course, this situates Young Thug into the melee that basically happens around Cleveland Avenue around this day. On the other hand, defense is essentially saying, look, we can't cross-examine this caller. She did not want to be identified, and she refuses to be found, so I can't cross-examine this person. And also, this is the only mention of Young Thug. She's not even sure whether it's Young Thug. She said Young Thug or somebody. So before we get into what actually happened with this call, what did we even think about this being considered as evidence?
Well, there was a negotiation that happened over this call. And what they ended up doing is playing the call for the jury, but they cut out the reference to Young Thug, which was interesting. So just to set that up, Jewel, I mean, what did you make of all that and the final thing that the jury got to hear?
Well, I think the point of introducing the 911 call is to introduce Young Thug as being involved in this. And so if you cut the reference to Young Thug out, then it just becomes a 911 call about chaos being in the neighborhood, which we already know that there's a shooting in the neighborhood. We already kind of have some of these pieces. I think the pertinent piece of that call was that somebody named Young Thug, who was involved in this shooting, is in this woman's house. If we don't hear the name Young Thug, then what does that kind of bolster?
Yeah, I mean, it does suggest that someone maybe got away from the shooting and was in her apartment. And even if you don't name that person, could have been Young Thug, which is what they've been sort of insinuating alluding with this person that escaped, that may have looked like a woman, that may have had blonde dreads or blonde hair or whatever, and maybe was hiding out in an apartment.
I think it's important to note when it comes to this 911 call, too, that the reason defense attorneys were so adamant that the Young Thug reference not be brought in and the reason that it wasn't brought in was because the calls were made by people who insisted on being anonymous. And so they are not going to be called to the witness stand. They're not going to be testified. They're not going to testify. And because of that, defense attorneys won't get a chance to cross-examine them, right? So then it becomes you can't bring up my client if I don't get the opportunity to cross-examine you on this thing. And so that is that's the big reason why Young Thug's name has been omitted from this 911 call.
Yeah, and defense argued that this was double hearsay.
Yeah.
Right? So it was hearsay because you're getting this woman who's not actually witnessing anything happen. She's saying, my neighbor's telling me that somebody came into her apartment, which that whole situation is a little bit strange. It's like this woman comes over physically to her neighbor's apartment, tells her there's someone in her apartment and her baby's there and whatever, but then goes back to the apartment and has her phone with her, but doesn't call the police herself. So it's just kind of a strange situation to begin with. But so you have this one layer of hearsay. And then the second layer of hearsay is because they can't bring anybody in to talk about this.
Right.
So you've just got basically you're relying on Love's interpretation of this. And that's a dangerous thing to put to the jury.
There's so much interpretation over this call.
And
is this person frantic? Are they not frantic? Is this an emergency? Is it not an emergency? Mm-hmm. Where are they? How close in proximity is she to the cop cars? How close is she to the actual situation concerning the coin laundromat? There's so much speculation that I kept wondering could easily have just been resolved much more expediently with a testimony.
Some part of this, I think, might be things the jury, like the jury has got no basis in what YSL is or Gang Life is, you would think. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're serving on a jury, it's unlikely that they've been convicted of a felony or have been living a gang life themselves. And so let me just say this, like this apartment complex is notorious. The people who have lived in this apartment complex have lived like sort of with YSL. Mm-hmm. For a long time. Like that's home base. And the idea that there's a shooting or cops are chasing somebody and somebody goes into a random apartment and they don't call the cops is not, or somebody else calls the cops, is not
strange.
Unreasonable for that apartment complex, mm-hmm. given that condition. But it's not something the jury would understand.
Mm.
It's something the cops would understand.
Yep.
And so maybe they're thinking, look, we need to just demonstrate the dysfunction of this place by showing this. Except that we're really early in that process, or they're just not getting to that. They haven't made that point very clearly.
Yeah, because there's even I think I was thinking about that in terms of the 911 call and like why. It maybe is not that unusual that like she would have gone back into the house or whatever. Like there's this like nuance of community that even when we talk about the Derek Dotson robbery and they call him by a nickname. And so
Dirty
he
Red.
Clearly knows kind of he's familiar with the person that's robbing him. The person that's robbing him is familiar with him. There's a communal and familiarity element there that like we haven't really drilled down into, but I think matters and explains behavior that if you're not familiar with this type of community would seem strange.
Mm-hmm. This is all a really good point that a lot of this just hasn't been established, certainly over like the past couple days or whatever. And I'm be curious to see whether they actually get to explaining the culture of that area and just like how that informs the way that police navigate this area, which would ultimately lead us to this one, this case in particular.
And this whole idea of sort of your frame of reference, your personal frame of reference, is really interesting. We talk about, like, I think the three of us, Christina, George, and myself, at least, we've gotten to know each other pretty well in this process. We're all journalists. We're all fairly skeptical. But we're not jurors, and we don't know what jurors think. So, you know, I'm curious, Jewel, what you think, now that we're bringing you in as a guest this week, about what the jury, like, we sort of assume, oh, the jury's thinking this, but we really can't make any assumptions, can we?
You can't, because I think people, the way that I always try to explain it is you can have the same exact experience as the person sitting next to you, and you can have a completely different perception of it. That's just human nature. It's how it works, right? And I think specifically for people in Atlanta who have interacted with crime in some way, have been victims of crime, or, you know, they've had things occur around them, they might leave that situation with a completely different perspective than the person next to them who experienced the same exact thing. I always tell people, my family, for instance, this was probably 7 or 8 years ago, my cousin was killed by 15 and 16-year-old gang members, right? And even within our family, the perceptions of justice and what's a reasonable punishment versus an unreasonable punishment differs based on age, based on other experiences that we've had, right? There are people who have very strong, maybe are tougher on crime than others, right? And this is all our relative. This happened to our relative, but we just have completely different perceptions of crime in Atlanta and how prevalent it is, right? And kind of punishment and justice. And so I think it's really hard to speculate and to be certain what someone's perception might be, even though we're all experiencing the same evidence, we're looking at the same testimony. We might be interpreting it completely different, you know, than what somebody else is, who is also an Atlanta native and also maybe is familiar with these neighborhoods, et cetera, et cetera.
Exactly. I was about to say, if like these jurors already have this understanding of like how communities like this work and just like how communal everything is, like they might just take a lot of things for granted. It's like, okay, well, like, okay, we recognize all this based on our prior experience with crime here in Atlanta. There's probably not a whole lot that they need to question about the testimony.
But you could also have a different relation to police. Like, right, there might be people who are familiar and are like, get them, basically. Like, cops need to be tough on this. I'm tired of my neighborhood being, you know, a part of this narrative, right? And there are other people that are like, the cops are making it worse, or they're harassing, or it's uncalled for, or it's too tough, right? People who grew up in the same exact neighborhood or had the same exact experiences might just really have a different perception. Mm-hmm. You don't know.
I guess my overall question with all this, and George, maybe I'll throw this one to you because I'm curious what you think about this. If this is a gang-related incident tied to YSL, I guess I have two questions. Why are Frederick Prothrow and Adrian Bean not in the indictment? And my second question is, if they think Young Thug is tied to this incident, why wasn't he arrested in 2013 when this incident happened?
Well, that's, let me take the second first, because Young Thug wasn't arrested because they didn't have enough evidence, which raises the question, why are we hearing about it now? Like, how in the world does a phone call that results in, you know, there's an investigation but no arrest, suddenly still get in front of a jury when you're considering his guilt as, you know, an accused gang member? And the answer is RICO. RICO and gang cases allow for a quality of evidence to be introduced that you would not get in a regular trial. And it's why the defense bar hates RICO trials. This would not be fair in another trial. If he was on trial for a murder and not being charged as a gang member, none of this would be admissible. And they know it. So they charge him with RICO, and they can throw the kitchen sink at him. And the question is whether or not the jury understands this, and to what degree they accept or discount that. Your first question was, why weren't the other guys brought in? And maybe it's because it's just a super complex case as it is, and there's no point. Maybe Prothrow is in prison. He's in Telfair State Prison with a max out date in 2028. It isn't clear that they get more from him. Like, can you, like, do you convict him on a gang crime on top of that and extend his sentence? I mean, okay. That's something, like, but I don't know from a position of criminal justice sense, it makes sense to stick an extra 5 years, this guy in jail for an extra 5 years. So, you know, he's been in jail for the last 10. I think it's triage.
Even if Young Thug is in this car, even if people believe that Young Thug is in this car, that he got away and he was tied to this incident, how are they making the argument that this is a gang crime that is tied to YSL? Because that seems, you know, we talk about that third box all the time, the in furtherance of a gang box. We talked a lot about that last week. How is that case being made? And I'm from what you've been saying so far, it sounds like maybe that's just a slow thing they're trying to trickle out over time. Is that right?
So I think so. Like, the hard part here is that a lot of the prosecution strategy is inscrutable. I'm guessing at it. I feel like a Kremlinologist trying to understand what Moscow is doing. They're not telegraphing anything either. They've gone out of their way to avoid, you know, presenting, you know, a list of what witnesses are going to be coming next and when. So we're left to guess at what their long-term strategy here is. They want to show a pattern. Like, it's to describe somebody as a gang member, you want to show a pattern of gang crime.
There was some language in the testimony here that made me perk up with this gang stuff too, because they talked about sort of like drug money in the car being used to buy lean. At one point, Walter Murphy was described as like Young Thug's like guy, like his henchman or something. There was a term that was used that basically insinuated that. And so I can see the pieces sort of like slowly being assembled. But I'm surprised that they aren't with every one of these incidents being like, this is why this is a gang incident.
Yeah. More deliberate. There was a funny moment about the lean I thought about, especially when I think about juror perception. They asked Adrian Bean if he knew what a lean was, and he was like, no.
Do you recall telling Detective David Quinn that after you all determined that nothing was going on with that situation, you, DK, or the person with the D and the K on his face, Big Fred and Young Thug were all going in on some lean?
No, ma'am.
Do you know what lean is?
No, ma'am.
You don't know what lean is?
No, ma'am.
And then they asked him if he knew what a lick was, and he was like, no. And I'm like, somebody, sir. Like, okay. Like, the I don't recalls are getting a little fast and loose, Adrian B. You don't know what lean is, and you don't know what a lick is. It was an interesting.
He said, no, ma'am.
I don't know what a lick is. What is that?
So, the no ma'ams were interesting, because at first I was like, oh, they're getting nothing from this guy. And I thought that he was like stonewalling him, and it was. But what you realize is that this strategically, we talked a little bit about this already, but the no ma'ams add up. And so by the time they gave the prosecution an opportunity to read every single piece of that police report
and the
have
jail
him
call.
Comment on it and the jail call and all these things, they were basically able to assemble that entire narrative around these no ma'ams, which was kind of fascinating to watch.
It's basically like a little preview. Y'all gonna hear something a little later. Just here's a sprinkling of what y'all might hear in a few days. You know, like, yeah, it's a little preview.
Next time on the YSL trial.
All right, so overall, let's wrap up the Red Nissan conversation, the Free Willy incident, whatever we want to call it. Let's wrap up the conversation on this. So I'm going to ask each one of you, do you think this incident helped the prosecution more or the defense more or was neutral? Jewel, we'll start with you.
Ooh. I want to see a little more. I want to see the jail call be introduced. I'm not sure yet. So far, I am more neutral than anything. I think there have certainly been moments that have helped their case, but I still haven't seen it be brought together in a way that I think really
coheres.
It's not really coherent at this point. But I think if we tie in those pieces, right, Walter Murphy is on the witness list. We have this jail call coming up. There are some pieces that I think very well could tie it together and make it a strong presentation for the prosecution. But I'm not sure I've seen it be as cohesive as it should be yet.
Christina, what about you?
It's interesting. Now that we have to factor in Adrian Bean's testimony and the possible strategy leading up to that, I could certainly see how prosecution ultimately will benefit, like especially, I mean, we'll see how the coming days, you know, turn out. But what I was taking away from all this even prior to that was that nobody remembers a damn thing. Nobody knew a thing back then. But certainly when you're talking about a police officer who typically wears corrective lenses, if only for reading, couldn't even see in the car. And she was the one who said that there might have been, she identified a female driver.
Why weren't you wearing your glasses on that day?
I normally don't wear glasses. I like to wear them just to suit up my attire.
Okay.
It's just my forte.
Okay. But they are prescription, is that correct?
Absolutely.
Okay. It's like, how much can we really like take into consideration here? There was a lot. I mean, as we talked about, you know, it's really hard to remember incidents like this where everything just happened so fast. And to me, this was just testimony, I guess, to just how imperfectly the human mind is when it comes to remembering something this long ago.
And one quick thing before we get to you, George. So the other thing that was interesting about the cops was you learned how siloed each one of those positions were. Like the people, I was shocked that the cops that like made the arrest then just have nothing to do with the rest of the process. Like Detective Quinn comes in and then, so these cops had no idea what happened after the incident. They didn't know. And so you don't have one person on the police side. Detective Quinn maybe is that person,
right?
But didn't firsthand witness anything.
The radio ends up being like a really apt metaphor for all this, right? Because we get into all this technical jargon, whatever, about how like at some points you can tune into the main channel and get in what's going on. You could relay messages there, but then you could silo off into this other channel and exchange information that way. And so as all this is sort of amounting together, we hear 30 minutes of people just trying to figure out what the hell is going on and just being like, okay, are you hip to this? We're finding a woman now. We're going to find a woman who's hopped over the fence. And we're like, wait a second, a woman?
We have a female in custody, black female with blonde hair.
All right, 5301, we know we're missing a black female with a blonde wig.
And it's just like, it is chaos. And so we did kind of see that unfold on the stand where people were just like, I was here to do one job and one job only. I don't know the other person's job. Maybe I'm aware of it, but who knows? Who knows, honestly?
So, George, what did you think? What's your overall impression of this incident and whether you think it helped the prosecution or defense more?
So I'm kind of with Jewel on this one. It's kind of TBD. I'll be neutral. Like, my vote is neutral. If they can tie this very clearly to other evidence that's stronger than what we've seen, then this makes all the sense in the world. It's a building block. You're building it, you know,
building
a wall brick by brick. But if there's nothing, then it's just a brick. And I don't need a brick.
Just a brick that broken off the wall of a laundromat smashed into a Nissan.
Yeah. That's the metaphor for this entire trial. I'm like, I got a bunch of bricks.
Right? Don't know what we going to make with it, but we got a bunch of bricks. TBD on what's going to come with the bricks.
Maybe a retaining wall.
Could be a retaining wall.
I got to fix that laundromat.
Yeah, we got to fix the laundromat.
All right. Well, that's great. So let's take a break. We'll come back and we'll talk a little bit more about the media's reaction to this trial with Julie Bigger.
With the best all-inclusive vacation deals to Mexico and the Caribbean, booking your getaway with Cheap Caribbean Vacations means you have more freedom to do your deal. Whether you want to enjoy snorkeling, endless margaritas and more, or simply soak up the sun and sand in a tropical paradise, Cheap Caribbean Vacations has your deal for that. Plan and book the exact getaway you want at exactly the right price for you by using our exclusive budget beach finder, or find a featured all-inclusive package to Generations Riviera Maya Resort and do your deal at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? Meet Lisa, the sleep expert. Here at Lisa, we know that good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. That's why their mattresses are made for exceptional comfort and support, catering to every sleep need. check out Lisa's Sapira Hybrid Mattress, named Best Hybrid Mattress 5 years running. Sleep hot? The Chill Collection is built with cool-to-the-touch top fabric and layers of high-density comfort foams, all intended to remove excess body heat while maximizing comfort. With Lisa, getting a new mattress has never been easier. Delivery is free, and you have 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. Don't spend another night dreaming of better sleep. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to lisa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. That's leesa.com/iHeart. Exclusions apply. See lisa.com for more details.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences, with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at avalonwaterways.com.
We are back, and we figure with this part of the conversation, we just have to rant, you guys. We have to make sense of our experience covering this trial as journalists, especially with Jewel and I being entertainment reporters, and this concerning, like, one of the biggest rappers to come out of Atlanta. This is somebody who you'd be covering. You've profiled Gunna for GQ. I profiled him for XXL. So, like, this is very much in our orbit. I'm going to begin with the story. Okay, because Jewel and I have both been on CNN. We've been on the show, first of all, with Victor Blackwell, both talking about the YSL trial. So there was a moment, Jewel, where I was literally about to step on set. They had me all mic'd up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And this was, I was on there to talk about the arrest of YSL defense attorney Nicole Fagan, mm-hmm. which is this whole thing. I'm about to step onto set, and one of the camera crew was like, this isn't even the first attorney to be arrested who's connected to this trial. And I was like, that is correct. That's correct. I felt like such a proud teacher. I said, how have you been keeping up with this trial? And he said, Instagram.
Yeah, that's right. How does anyone keep up with anything, Christina? Instagram and TikTok.
This is the question that is very much at the center of our jobs right now.
Absolutely.
What has that been like to offer context, and George, you can speak to this too, of course, in this age of social media? What has that been like for you?
Interesting, concerning, rewarding. I think all of the above, right? Like, I think I see it as my job to be able to report on things and inform people, and social media certainly provides a platform to be able to do that if people are open to it. Key point being, if people are open to it and everybody ain't open to it. But I also think it can be frustrating because people operate, we talked about how, like, the police officers operate in a silo. People operate in silos, right? And mm-hmm. so if you've seen a 12-second clip on Instagram or TikTok, you probably will argue me down that you know more about the case than I do. And that I'll probably let you, because I'm not going to argue back. You know what I mean? And so I think it has been frustrating because you see how easily misinformation, or even if it's not a lie, it's not the full truth or it's not the full picture, you see how quickly things like that can disseminate on social media. And for a case, I think what's particularly interesting about this case is that it's been going on for so long, and we have no end in sight, okay? And so when you have a case that's this length and you have the short attention spans that we have as a society, good luck getting everyone to know what the hell is going on at any point in time. I've been covering, as you said, Christina, rap in Atlanta, hip hop in Atlanta for years. Mm-hmm. And I had just covered when the indictment came down. I had just written that profile of Gunna for GQ. And so I was already kind of in the YSL orbit kind of that year. Little did I know that it would become the only orbit that I would be in for years to come.
That would be his last of his greatest fits for some time.
I went to, and I think I've described that party to you that I went to, the Gunna party. I went, it's always to me very indicative of how quickly things turn. I went to Gunna's album the week that I profiled him, went number one. And so I went to the, it was like a celebration of that. And it was at, I don't remember the name of the steak place, the one where they cut it with the samurai sword.
You've told me all
and
I need
like
to know.
Gold, it's like gold foil encrusted steaks. Yeah. It's very dramatic. And I went there and they had these like big number one balloons that were like swaying and the glasses were like shattering off the floor because Drake was playing so loudly at the event. And Gunna, Young Thug, of course, show up at the very last minute. They don't even eat. But there is like these like gold encrusted steaks and there's smoke billowing from the cutting boards where they're cutting the steaks with samurai. It's so dramatic.
Uh-huh.
And I'm like, this is the most Atlanta rap event I've ever been to in my entire life. And that was in February, I want to say.
Damn.
And by May, right, we get this indictment. And by the time we get to summer, I'm sitting in a courtroom with Gunna's mom and she's crying because her son is being denied bond, right, and is facing some very serious charge. It has been a wild, wild ride because every time you think you have a grasp on what is going on and there will be no more turns, there is always a twist.
Man.
There is always a twist.
I mean, we talk about, like, how much of a struggle it is just to be able to keep up when, like, really it's our jobs. But I'm curious, you talked about, like, all these small points that could stand to get lost. Like, what's an example of something that you've seen kind of get lost in the mix? Or George, you too, like if there are misconceptions that have popped up about this trial because of all the intricacies that we're trying to recap, you know, week after week.
Yeah, I think there have been like some more lighter ones. Like everyone is convinced that the jury was jammed into lifestyle in court, which is actually not true. They played it to the judge to see if they should play it in front of the jury. They didn't play it to the jury. But then also I think an example of kind of not a lie, but not the full truth is there were so many clips of Tick's testimony that popped up on YouTube or TikTok or Instagram, right? And depending on what clip you see, you form the opinion of, oh, he's singing like a canary, or look at him holding it down. He ain't telling them nothing, right?
Wow.
And maybe your opinion would be neither, or maybe a little more neutral, or maybe you would have the same opinion. I don't know. But if you see the total thing, that might change your perception of the, and mind you, he testified over days. So the total thing was quite long. It was not 2 minutes or 30 seconds or whatever the short TikTok version was. But that might change your perception of his testimony, how helpful he was to either the prosecution or the defense, and what role he played for the larger case. And so I think those are like examples of something that seems small. And maybe it is small. The case isn't over, though. Maybe it's big, and maybe it's something that he says something really small that really sticks with the jurors and becomes crucial in them forming their opinion on this case.
Mm-hmm.
But because you only saw that 30-second testimony where he's naming the defendants in the courtroom, you think, look at him snitching. Or you hear him say, you know, he doesn't recall, and you think, look at him holding it down, right? It's
right.
It's kind of that thing that is interesting to me.
George, have there been any interesting misconceptions or understandings about the trial that you've come across?
People are not nuanced about any of this stuff. That has not been my experience. Most of the folks who sort of talk to me or ask me about this stuff, like, it's immediately a discussion of lyrics and the use of lyrics in trial.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's almost always what they lead with. Like, in terms of, like, how it's being discussed in the public sphere, online. Like, so there's this whole set of, like, Young Thug stans, and I'm mm-hmm. not, like, I mean, and why wouldn't there be? Free Thug, Free YSL, like, that flood everything that anybody's ever, like, discussing about this. And I'm trying to decide to what degree they should be embraced and or ignored.
Yeah, it's interesting. Even when I watch the live streams, George, I have to shut the chat down. Because Young Thug fans, they come out, they represent, good for them. But I'm trying, that's in my own best efforts to view everything objectively. I'm like, okay, am I going to have an opinion of this? Aside from what's going down in the chat, I need to at least try.
I think we've brought up a point about how the length of this trial complicates what people are able to know. I think about the one that I always compare is the Tory Lanez trial. And that was about 2 weeks long. A newspaper, a digital publication, magazine, whatever, can spare a reporter for 2 weeks
to say this is your beat. You go focus on this and you don't report on anything else. You're reporting on this trial. You cannot, no one can afford to do that for 2.5 years or however long, right? Mm-hmm. And so they're going to be covering other things. They're not going to just be on the YSL beat. There's no one thread that you can follow that is from start to finish YSL
right.
and every minute detail that might end up coming back to be important later, mm-hmm. right? That's what makes this so complicated is how long it is and how difficult it is to find a number of voices that are really zoomed in on this and doing giving you the play-by-play for this length of time.
Well, on that note, I think we're basically wrapped up. Now, there's a few small things we may want to just like hit in like kind of a lightning round because we did have some funny moments. So we had the case of the stolen snacks.
I'm not sure who, I guess, come in and clean up, but they ate all our snacks.
I'm sorry.
So this...
I know nothing.
This juror, you can hear it in sort of the in-between stuff on the feed. She, and we'll play it in the show, obviously. She talks about how the snacks have been stolen from the juror room.
We're not sure who come and clean up or...
Why are you blaming some other people? I mean, we don't know if anybody's taking it. That place is locked anyways. So are you sure you're not eating up all the snacks? We only have a limited amount.
No, we actually purchased our own.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, I will... I'll launch an investigation. How about that?
You know, they don't get much. They don't get much, these people. They get paid very little. Just, you know, let them have their snacks for God's
And they
sakes.
Want an investigation.
Yes, they want an investigation. So season two, we were joking, yeah. King Slime.
It's going to investigate what happened to the snacks.
Where'd the snacks go?
Right. Obviously, there's footage. There's got to be.
I ate them.
Please, George, please.
And we also have a juror who is excused for moving, which we didn't get yep. to. That was something that happened sort of in between our tapings. This was a woman who had apparently expressed that she was going to be moving. And they were just like, well, we're going to take her anyway and see how the chips fall. She showed a lease. She has moved, I think. It was the end of
February.
As of now.
She's officially relocated from another county.
To Cherokee County, yeah. Mm-hmm. So she's off the trial. So they only have three left. Yeah.
If they lose four from this point forward,
that's when you have an issue.
Start over.
So that's something to look at, considering how long this case could go. We'll tackle some other stuff on the next show. There's a potential other indictment coming down the pipes that we'll talk about maybe in a future show. So that'll be a little tease for you. But thanks for listening this week. And thanks to Jewel Wicker for coming in and joining us. Such a lovely time with you.
Thank you.
Love hearing
for
your opinions
me.
And your insights. It was great. And we'll be back next week. Nope. We'll be back in 2 weeks.
Like, don't make any promises we can't keep, okay? King Slime is a production of iHeart Podcasts and Heirloom Media.
It's written and produced by George Chidi, Christina Lee, and Tommy Andres.
Mixing, sound design, and original music by Evan Tyer and Taylor Chicoine.
The executive producer and editor is Tommy Andres.
Our theme music is by Dun Deal.
For more shows from iHeart Podcasts, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. What if we told you about a major breakthrough on awesome savings on all-inclusive beach vacays?
OMG, this could break the case.
Case? I'm talking about CheapCaribbean.com.
Ooh, is it full of chilling intrigue?
No, it's full of hot savings. CheapCaribbean.com's semi-annual sale is helping you save $200 off your next booking for 4 nights or more. Score site-wide deals to your favorite beaches in Cancun, Aruba, Jamaica, and more now through the end of April.
We gotta take this show on the road.
Let's start at CheapCaribbean.com.
Are you on the hunt for a new home this spring, but don't know where to start? Fisher Homes is your solution. Your new home should reflect you from the front door to the kitchen and even your outdoor space. Start your journey by selecting your ideal home site, like in a cul-de-sac or that's tree-lined, and then choose from a variety of expertly designed floor plans. Bring it all together at our Lifestyle Design Center. Let Fisher Homes be your new home solution this spring and start making memories at fisherhomes.com.
Tired of restless nights? At Leesa, we know good sleep is essential for mental, physical, and emotional health. From memory foam mattresses to hybrids that keep you cool all night long, Leesa's mattresses offer exceptional comfort and support with free delivery and 100 nights to try out your mattress in the comfort of your home. For a limited time, save up to $700 off select mattresses plus two free pillows. Go to leesa.com/iHeart for an additional $50 off mattresses and select goods. Exclusions apply. See leesa.com for more details.
Are the old world picturesque shores of Europe calling you? Set sail on an adventure with Avalon Waterways. Enjoy an elevated cruising experience. Avalon Waterways offers smaller ships, bigger experiences, with fewer people and more of, well, everything good about river cruising. Don't just dream about quaint towns and cobblestone villages. See them for yourself and make lasting memories. Discover limited time offers today at avalonwaterways.com.